Good morning. Keep breathing. It's best. Breathe in gently. Breathe through. And then exhale. Breathe in. Breathe up. Breathe through. Have the realization that the Christ in me is awake now. The Christ in me, the light in me, the love in me, my memory of God, my memory of good, my memory of love and principle. The Christ in me is awake now. Those of you who care to, would you affirm that with me? The Christ in me is awake now. So let that memory of God, of good, of life, of love, let it flow through. Let it flow through your vision and your hearing. Let it flow through your word. Let it flow through your whole body, head to toe and toe to head. Christ in me, awake. The memory of God in me, awake now. The memory of life in me, awake now. Imagine if today is the day that you choose life and choose it more abundantly. Today I choose life and I choose it more abundantly in every cell, every tissue, every fiber of my being. Life and life more abundant. Life awakened in my thoughts. Life awakened in my word. Life awakened in my actions, my demonstrations. Life awake, but life more abundant. I'm going to travel into the silence on that journey in. Just remember, today I choose life, and I choose it more abundantly. Today I choose life, and I choose it more abundantly. Let's go on in. Life awakened. From my head to my toes to my fingertips. I let all that I touch become more greatly awakened with life, and life more abundantly. Today, I am conscious of life. And all that life entails. Today I give myself life. So knowing that, let's start our journey back here. Back here to this sanctuary, this place called Unity. As we come back, let us come back refreshed, renewed, fully aware of the good that has just taken place. That we may say thank you and amen. Silly superstitions. When I was doing Vipassana back in September, and I came here and I talked about it, but as I'm on sabbatical from Unity of Norwalk right now, and I'm until the end of November, and so I'm taking trips. I'm doing a lot of forgiveness work, a lot of exploring what my beliefs are. And here's what's funny: my beliefs aren't always what I think they are or wish they were. And I've caught myself in several places. And I've discovered, especially during the Vipassana thing, that I have, because Vipassana, I'm not going to go into the whole thing. I did that last month, watch that talk by all means. But you're not allowed to pray during Vipassana. I can't read, can't write, can't kill anything, my goodness. The restrictions. And so, to look at the but the not praying part. So I didn't use the word God for about 12 days, and since then I've barely used the word God because I realized I was using God superstitiously. Some of you identify. I like it's a talisman, like it's a magic word. And we don't teach God magically. We don't teach God superstitiously. We don't teach God to get stuff. Hopefully we don't. That doesn't mean we don't practice God superstitiously. That doesn't mean we don't practice. Because you see, I think I believe in the God of metaphysics. But then I find myself begging for stuff in traffic when people don't do what I want them to do, when I'm experiencing fear, anybody? Doubt, which is the fear. When I think I'm not loved, which is a great deal of the time I have discovered. Every time I think I can't have what I want, that's a form of thinking I'm unloved. Every time I complain about traffic, it's a form of claiming I'm unloved. Every time I tell myself there is another being on this planet that is less than a God being, I'm telling myself I am unloved. Every time I express a statement that is unloving about another human being on this planet, I'm telling myself I am not loved. I don't know that at the time. But if I pay attention and I see the results of my thoughts, my words, my actions, I say, oh, I am here declaring there's an absence of love. So the word I've been using instead of God is love. Because you see, I can pray to God. I can forget and pray to God, which I've been taught by all my metaphysical teachers not to do that. Because there is no God to pray to. God is. But I can forget that and start to personify. But I can't pray to love. I can only pray from love. And I know that. Love really has no personality. I can't get anything from love. I can only experience love. So I have been declaring the presence of love in my life. And my life is going much easier than it was just 2 months ago. And so I thought about, for Halloween weekend especially, I thought, let's talk about superstition a little bit, how we use life superstitiously without even knowing it. Like, I looked up a couple of definitions of superstition. And I looked at this, the metaphysical meaning of superstition. Beliefs of those who live on the mere surface of things. Beliefs that certain things or occurrences are good or bad omens. Under all conditions and circumstances, declare the perfect law of divine mind. Thou shalt be perfect with God. In the revealing word, it says that the word superstition is derived from two Latin words, one of which means over, and the other, stand. It means there is something that stands over one. We believe in signs and omens. Anybody? Friday the 13th, the cat walking in front of you, whistling in the dressing room, what have you. Bobby is just as actively participating with me in this talk. Oh, no, no, yes, yes, oh, yeah. You watch too much TV. You talk to the TV. We believe in signs and omens that we don't understand. And part of those is the affirmations that we learn in new thoughts. Somewhere, some of us, me included, get confused. We learn affirmations and we try to use them to create something rather than to remind us of what is. See, love is, when I declare love is, I'm not trying to create love. I'm trying to remind myself that there is no absence of it. But if I'm frightened, I can get very confused and try to create love. I can try to create what already is. I can try to make something out of nothing, when all of it is already here. And it's based on my superstitious belief that there is somehow an absence of good. Seems to me, the ones who are the greatest believers in the absence of good are the ones who watch the news the most. The ones that have got their news stations on all day long. The ones that have got their Facebook on all day long next to the news station. And I'm not here to criticize. Yes, I am. Oh, my headache. Oh, let me try to be nice about it. But I'm not here to condemn anybody. But if you are listening to the news all day long, you're reading your newspapers, you got your Facebook posts on, you have no right to complain about the misery that is your life. You have no right whatsoever to complain about how the world is against you. You have created that misery. You are the one that makes the statement, this world is bad and I have to keep watching for how it's bad. My life is bad and I have to keep watching for how I'm under attack. Because the problem is, once you leave your television, once you leave your Facebook, you're out in the street and you're watching. Who's against me? What's against me? And then you find your friends who can converse with you. No, the other ones that watch TV all day. And then you all come out at night like bats to discuss the misery of the world. You know, if I hadn't at some point broken with my mother's beliefs, I'd be one of the most negative, frightened people in the world. Instead, I'm somewhat frightened and negative in the world. It's funny thing. I made a trip to Pennsylvania last week and a half. I was there. I got back through this week. And I did a lot of forgiveness work. Why? Because I needed to. I went and found my last, there's been a few of them, last stepfather's grave. And I didn't know where, I knew which cemetery it was in. I've never been to that cemetery before. But I wanted to let him go. I wanted to release and let him go in my mind. And I don't know what it'll do for him in the ethers. But what I saw is I have been picking and choosing my regrets in life. Nobody has forced any regret on me. I know this because before my mother made her transition, and I did not know she was about to transition, but I was at home for Christmas in 1996, and I'd had an epiphany that fall that somewhere I had changed. That somewhere I was not the person I was as a teenager, or the person in my early to mid to late 20s. At this point, I was in my early 30s, and I was different. I had been doing my spiritual work, and it was just before I found Unity. And I thought, oh my goodness, look at me, look at who I am. And then I realized I couldn't be this if it hadn't been for that. It was very clear to me that it took my entire upbringing, such as it was, to make me the good that I am now, to where I am available to be of service, to be present in a world of other people. Because suddenly I had become aware there were other people in the world. I had forgotten that if I had ever known it. And so my mother had taken to apologizing for my childhood, because as a teenager, I would win arguments by letting her know she had not been a very good mother, and I didn't put it that way back then. But it was the only way to end the chaos in those days. So through my early adulthood, she'd started apologizing. And finally, I thought, this isn't working. I'm not attacking anymore, but she's preventing an attack. And that Christmas that I was home in 96, she had started, and I said, Mother, and I'd already planned to do this. This is a form of amends. Amends is to rethink your life, to rethink who you are, what situations are. And I said, Mother, you never have to apologize again. Please know that. I don't need you to. You don't need to. I said, well, never lie about what the past was, but look at me. Look at who I am. And you know how wildly different than I was. And she said, yeah, you really are. And I said, but it took all that to make this. And I said, so you really don't. And 3 weeks later, by surprise, she made her transition. Completely, January, she took a nap, 64 years old, and left. So as I say, I killed my mother, is what it feels like. And I'm okay with it, not that I killed my mother, but I'm okay that she left. She wasn't happy here. She wasn't happy in her body, she wasn't happy in her life. There was so much mass confusion in our home, in my mother. She hadn't been taught very well, and she didn't know how to pursue a new understanding. She became a very good mother to me, by the way, the last 5 years of her life. She was really a wonderful mother to me. But here's the point. So last week when I go to my stepfather's grave, I realized I have been picking and choosing which things are okay from my childhood to bring me to this good that I am now. Either all of it brought me to this good, or this isn't good. And that's real, because if I'm still saying, he shouldn't have done this, he shouldn't have done that, I mean, I put him in my act for some things, and because I've been entertaining the regrets of what my stepfather did with us. I've been entertaining, I've been playing them, I've been telling the story for years. I charged a cover to tell the story. And so to a real, oh, wait a minute. I gotta let him, I let my dad off the hook, and I experienced forgiveness around that after praying on that. I let my mother off the hook. So I have a stepfather to let off the hook. The one before that, the marriage was so short, there's nothing to forgive. But I let the last one off the hook. I've worked so hard to let so many off the hook of my thoughts. Because I just don't want to live in regret. I'm promised that I will not have any regrets. I am promised that. No regrets. Well, but I have to do my part to experience that. Because otherwise, it's a form of superstition. I was offered freedom in unity, and I wasn't offered it conditionally, except that I had to forgive everyone, including myself. And I didn't know how to do that. But I knew within God, or love, it's possible. It wouldn't happen with a bunch of empty affirmations or denials to superstitiously try to get rid of something or get something. I had to learn how to experience forgiveness around my body, around myself, my looks, my everything, my past, my behaviors. I had to learn how to experience forgiveness for everyone else's behaviors, or at least my thoughts around them. I had to learn how to experience forgiveness around money. I think a lot of us don't know we have to forgive money, but we do. I had to learn how to experience forgiveness around the street I walked on. And I had to learn how to experience forgiveness with the churches I went to as a child. I went to my childhood church last week, Church of Christ, Washington, Pennsylvania. If you're from there, it's Washington. Yeah. But I went to church. This is the third time I've gone there over the years because I wanted to understand what their point was. Because I didn't know as a child. I had no idea what their point was. And I caught myself last week because I went feeling like I will be called a heretic. I went feeling like, thinking I will be shunned. And I've gone, all three times I've gone as an adult, I thought that. Oh, they're going to hate me here. They're going to want to throw me out. They're going to whatever. Because I was kind of brought up that way, that they're judgmental and they're harsh. And it doesn't, what I learned is it doesn't matter if they are. I'm here to love all of them. I don't have to be loved by anybody here. I am loved with an everlasting love. So now I have to share the wealth. So I watch and I listen with an open mind. And I realized the whole point of that church is to get you to come forth and be baptized, immersed, so that you can accept the good that you are. It's not the words they used, but it's the equivalent of it. And I did that when I was 12. I walked forward at the end of a service. Because what I understood it to mean was, it's when I knew right from wrong. And I didn't know if I would behave right from wrong. But I knew. So it was time to claim that. And I walked forward at the end of a Sunday night service. And they immersed me in front of everybody. And the next day I knew things I didn't know before. So there's something to be said for that ritual. But it began to take confusion away from me. And the greatest thing I learned from that church in the time I went there was I could pray beyond, now I lay me down to sleep. That was the only prayer I knew as a child, and it was a spooky one. And too much dying in that prayer. And but God bless Uncle John, Louise, and all the people. But I didn't know what any of it meant. But just according to the Bible, it's time to put down childish things. One of my childish things is my belief in lack. My belief that somebody somewhere is out to get me. My belief that I'm not loved. And the follow-up on all those beliefs. My belief that there's an absence of good. That if I don't pray at this time in this position, I won't get to have my good. For years, I prayed just so I would get to sleep. Because I was afraid if I didn't say that prayer, I wouldn't be able to sleep that night. And then as I began healing, I would make myself get out of bed to pray. And I don't regret that at all. Because I started praying on my knees. Before I came to Unity, I began to pray on my knees. I never had as a child. We didn't go to those kind of churches. But I heard, get down on your knees and pray. And what I found out by doing that is I could focus on my relationship with the God of my understanding. And my understanding of God kept changing. As I did it morning, afternoon, and night, I would get on my knees. That was my position. That was my, Charles Fillmore started in a rocking chair. I started on my knees. And I would pray, and sometimes I would try to get stuff, but mostly I just tried to know God better. I sought to improve my relationship with what I understood as God, and every time I thought I knew what God was, God went and changed on me. God went and got bigger and bigger and bigger. It got so big it became no thing. God got so enormous for me that it became no thing at all. And then I came to Unity and I learned about love. And that became my word a lot of times. Love, 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 love. That's often how I pray. When I'm afraid, I just get love, 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 love. Because it changes my thought. It cuts the thought in half. It cuts the confusion in half. I'm going to read this real quickly. From the Holy Spirit's interpretation of the New Testament. 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians. that's funny. And it's chapter 1, verse 15, and it says, how are you to interpret the events of your life so that they may bring you joy? You are to interpret them truly and not with confusion. Confusion says that the events in your life are lord over you. Confusion says that the events in your life may bring you joy or sorrow or pain or peace or fear or safety or danger or frustration or any number of feelings, thoughts, and reactions. But always, confusion says the events are lord and you are subject. In all circumstances, to react accordingly to your lord. The true interpretation comes from who you are. You are not subject to a lord who rules over you. You are lord of your own subject. In other words, your experience is given you because you have chosen it. And so, if you would have another experience, you must choose differently. And so, to begin to look at things, oh, I'm telling myself how I should feel about this. I'm telling myself how I should think about this. We did a cruise 2 weeks ago, a big cruise, Crystal Cruise, and David was the headliner on it, and we didn't know if I was, they wanted both of us to perform. David was going to do a David Friedman show with various singers and stuff from the boat doing his thing in the big room. They wanted me to do my stand-up, but they were concerned about where to put me. So I went on the boat knowing I'm going to perform, but I don't know where. And they were talking about putting me in this room called the Hollywood Room, which is a small theater, and I wanted to be in the big Starlight Lounge because it suited my ego, quite frankly. Now, David was in the big, big Galaxy Lounge, and I knew they weren't going to put me there, and I didn't need to be there, but I wanted to be in the Starlight, and I had to help them to understand my act is not what it was in New York. I've taken a lot of the language out. It's funny, all the words I won awards for, now nobody wants to hear. And I'm not going to use those words here today, because that's not, you have to come see, you have to pay at cover charge to come hear those. It's actually on YouTube if you want to see it, but I'm not doing them here. Anyway, the act was going to be shorter anyway. So they did put me in the big lounge. But every day, I was on a cycle of belief and disbelief, and belief and disbelief, and ego, and then fortunately, because of the 10-day silence and my practice, I kept going back into spirit. But not to try to make it not matter, but to know the truth, because knowing the truth is what sets me free. And so I would listen to something that fed me in my heart rather than in my mind. And I would started reading books about love. And it brought me peace and it brought me calm. And so 4 a.m. one morning I woke up and I went down to that lounge and I did my act for the cleaning people down there. I worked that stage. And at 8 o'clock that morning, they called me and said, Sean, we'd like you to do your show in the Starlight Lounge tonight, or on Monday night, day after David's. And I said, thank you. And it was lovely. It was a lovely experience rather than a definition of who and what I am. I'm not defined by what I do. I'm defined by love. I am defined by peace. I am defined by joy. I am defined by that which God is. I am defined. And I was defined in the beginning. I don't have to do something. I'm not bad trying to get good. Unless I'm confused. I'm clear on that. Not one of us here is bad trying to get good. And no one out there is bad trying to get good. Unless they are confused. But it's up to you and I in here to make new choices about what to think about ourselves and what love is in regards to us. And it's up to you and I to rethink what love is regarding all them out there and all those on the news and in the papers and on your Facebook page. A lot of people think they're trying to help us by denouncing human beings every day on their Facebook page. What if we all got together and talked about love? Love is a reality, not a concept. Loving what is, I'm going to read this last thing to you. Maybe I'll listen myself while I read it. Well, there it is. Okay, it comes from 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 1. The reason for all things is love. Division is the opposite of love because division excludes. Love cannot exclude. Love is whole, knowing only truth. Become as an empty shell to know love. That is your reason. That is your true desire. To look on the world and divide it by judging is not love. And so it is not what you want. Lay down what you do not want and accept joyfully that which you do. Years ago, I met a man at Unity Village. He was not part of Unity. He happened to be there for a convention. And he had some money. And he was taking, after the opening night ceremonies, he took 20 of us to Outback for steak and lobster. Got to have the combination. We got there at closing time. And first they started to close, and he said, I'm bringing 20 people for steak and lobster. Suddenly they were open. Yeah. We came in, and the waitress was a teenager. And it was summertime. She didn't want to work overtime, and she showed it. Now, as she's serving us and she's doing things, I happened to notice our host. I'd never met him before this night. And I heard him say to the person next to him, she seems unhappy that we're here. I'm going to give her a big tip anyway. He didn't punish her because she had an attitude. He wanted to love her. He wanted to show her there is love here, even when you're in a bad mood, even when you're attacking the people at the table, even when you're just out of sorts. I call this not so silly superstitions because so much of what we use superstitiously
is not silly at all. It's unkind. It's unthoughtful. And it's so damaging to our psyche. And we come to Unity and we read our books so that we can put down unkindness and we can put down all confusion. We can put our confusion down and accept what we know absolutely has to be true. Today, I encourage you to speak to your body and declare, only love lives here. And then when you go, again, if you get on a bus or a subway, declare, only love lives here. And then when you go home, no matter what you have thought of your home before today, you declare, only love lives here. You declare it at the door. And if you are fortunate enough to have more than one room, you declare in, at the entrance to every room, only love lives here. Only love lives here. Only love lives here. That's not superstition. And it's not creating love. It is awakening your mind to see it, to use it, and to celebrate it. We come here for a reason. We come here to remember. The Christ in me is awakened now. Means that I remember God. I remember good. I remember love. I remember life. I remember what is. Now we must do our work to maintain the memory. Thanks for having me today.
To the test. You tried so hard to make sure everything was right, then you found you've only wound up.